common sense commentary on politics, culture, and current events. If it's on your mind, it's In the News. And now, In the News, with your host, Mike Dakak.
I think one of the saddest things about this moment that we're living in right now, one of the saddest moments in our lives right now, is that we're all realizing that our government doesn't work for us. They're not of us. They're not by us, and they're certainly not for us, right? I'm not exactly sure who they work for, but they don't work for us any longer. They work for themselves, and they work for this worldwide cabal that's working to bring the country down and freedom-loving peoples all over the world down, right? A government of the people, by the people, and for the people, like Lincoln said. It's no longer that, is it? And what's sad, what's even sadder than that whole situation, is that the people who are working with the cabal, the people that are a part of this and that are doing their bidding, they're doing the dirty work for them. They think they're getting paid. They think they're making money. They think they're achieving professional status and stardom or high positions. And sure enough, they're doing all of that. There's no doubt about it. But in essence, they're being bribed to destroy themselves. They're being bribed to destroy the world around them. And they don't see the big picture. They're in this car and they're driving, and there's kind of like a mirage that the road goes on for miles and miles, when really they're driving us all straight off a cliff. Let's talk about Chief Justice John Roberts for a few moments here. A whistleblower, Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, that is. A whistleblower has come out, and I believe I've mentioned this whistleblower to you before. He comes out and he says, John Roberts has been compromised since before he was even nominated to the Supreme Court, right around the time he was nominated, it sounds like. Remember, I keep saying it's not that they wait until you reach power to compromise you. They identify promising young people with potential very early on, and with interests in politics or interest in the judiciary or whatever the case may be. And then they start grooming you. Then they compromise you. And then they elevate you. Because why not? You're an asset now. So it behooves them to have you in power. If they control you, and they can be sure that they control you, and they can be assured that you're not going anywhere and you're not going to challenge their power, well then they want to see you go as far as you can, right? Want to know why none of the people in Congress seem to work for you and I? It's because they don't. If they did work for you and I, if they could even entertain the notion of working for you and I, they wouldn't be where they are. They wouldn't be in Congress. Well, this whistleblower comes out and says John Roberts was compromised even before he was nominated to the Supreme Court. And the way he was compromised is through his children, his kids. Roberts and his wife were unable to have kids, and so they looked to adopt. Well, this whistleblower, who goes by the name Ryan Dark White, but he also has a social media presence where he goes by the handle John Here to Help. So I'm going to call him John. In the transcript of this interview, which he gives to Lynn Wood, attorney Lynn Wood, you guys know Lynn Wood, he's played a big role in bringing a lot of the election cases, the election fraud cases, to court. And now the Georgia State Bar is trying to have him disbarred for that participation in those cases. It's a way of getting back at him. And so in this transcript, he mentions that Ryan Dark White is not the name he would have chosen for himself, but on his media channel, that seems to be a name that he has chosen for himself. So if he prefers to be called John, I'm trying to get in touch with him to verify this and a lot of other things. But if he prefers to be called John, I'm going to call him John. So John says the person who helped John Roberts with the adoption of his two young children is none other than Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein, of course, is the alleged world-renowned sex trafficker and child trafficker. And so John, the whistleblower, implicates Roberts as being a participant in entrapment schemes set up to blackmail prominent officials using the network of Epstein. And so John, the whistleblower, implicates Roberts as being a participant in entrapment schemes set up to blackmail prominent officials using the network of Epstein. Roberts, along with former Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, used younger people, children, supplied by Epstein's channels and his people. And he says that we were able to get FISA warrants, surveillance warrants, because Chief Justice Roberts would prepare them. And then he would send them off to whatever lower court or whatever FISA court judge that he controlled, and he would have them signed. But it was also the fact that Epstein was an intelligence asset. This is according to John the Whistleblower. That Epstein was an intelligence asset of some type to various agencies around the world. And so they used his information and they exploited it for their own good. So when he was here, John says, or his people were here, it was very easy to justify getting a FISA warrant on them. And so they would enact a warrant, they would surveil everything, and they would document it. But he says, and this is the troubling part, it makes you really angry and gets you kind of worked up. They would not help and they would not save the child that was involved in these blackmail schemes, these video recordings that were taking place. It was more important for them to have the leverage on everything. So he also says that Epstein helped facilitate the adoption of Roberts' two small children around the year 2000. Now, around that time, if you think back, Roberts was busy with the aftermath of the 2000 presidential campaign. There was a lot of controversy after that campaign, as there was with this. That one kind of paled in comparison to the controversy surrounding 2020. But Roberts was helping the George W. Bush campaign craft a legal strategy for winning the Supreme Court case that would ultimately make George W. Bush president. Roberts was a junior lawyer on the Bush team at the time. And so when Roberts was eventually nominated for the Supreme Court, obviously, George W. Bush would win that Supreme Court case and become president. You fast forward 5 years, and Roberts is being nominated for the Supreme Court by George W. Bush in 2005. At that time, press reports say Roberts and his wife had adopted two children, both from Latin America. However, a report in Time comes out and lists the children's place of birth as a different country. Jack McKay, a law partner of Roberts' wife, Jane, says that the two children who were adopted by the Robertses were born in Ireland 4.5 months apart. And now Ireland, what's interesting about that is that Ireland has some of the strictest laws in the world on adoption. And the most relevant to our discussion is that ordinarily only residents of the country can adopt. And we have to have resided in the country for at least a year. Now Roberts's wife, Jane, is the daughter of Irish immigrants, according to press reports, and she feels a strong connection to those roots, but neither she nor Roberts had lived in the country in Ireland for a year prior to the adoption. A lot of people also note the physical characteristics. I'm not a big fan of reporting on politicians' families, and especially their children, but some also note, I believe this is relevant to the discussion here, that the physical characteristics of the children are conventionally quote-unquote Irish. They have very light features, they have light hair, they have very fair skin. They're not really consistent with people of Latin American heritage. And so Roberts, he spends a few days in Florida back in 2000 advising lawyers for Bush on their legal strategy, but he didn't play a central role because at the time he was preoccupied with the adoption of his son. And Roberts would eventually adopt a little boy and a little girl. Epstein, according to John, the whistleblower, would help with the adoption of both. He helped them with his adopted children, he says. And from what was said and what was discussed openly, the children are not genetically brother and sister, but they're raised that way. And so John says that makes them more valuable. One, if not both, were originally from Wales, but they were in the Epstein channels and were easily removed from their version of foster care to Ireland. And so Epstein facilitates this for Roberts, so he could adopt them both at the same time. John says there was a little gap, but it was just paperwork. And Epstein did that for him. And so they met, they worked together on this thing, and he was doing favors at some point. Now, the exact nature of the quote-unquote work, having worked together, and the quote-unquote favors performed, has become a subject of much speculation. Now, first of all, that the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court would have circumvented strict laws during the adoption of his two infant children. I mean, I would open him up to a lot of questions about his ability to effectively execute the duties of his office. You have the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court has a problem following laws? Well, that's a political scandal that is probably not survivable. And if it's a political scandal that is probably not survivable, that opens one up to potential extortion and or blackmail. Now, that's a sentiment that's consistent with a lot of these recent allegations. In December, recall that reports came to light that a whistleblower from Federal Circuit Court told officials that a nation state has been blackmailing Chief Justice John Roberts since before his nomination to the Supreme Court. That nation state was not named. But the idea that Roberts has compromised in some way is seen by a lot of people to be a plausible explanation for, shall we say, questionable actions the justice has taken during his tenure on the bench. In 2012, recall, when the first Obamacare case reached the Supreme Court, Roberts, it's reported, was going to vote to strike the law down. He was going to vote against it. He reportedly changed his mind suddenly. While writing his opinion to strike the law down, he decided to vote to uphold it instead. Now, Obamacare, the individual mandate in Obamacare says that you have to pay a fine if you don't get insurance. If you're not covered for a particular tax year, when you come to file your taxes afterwards, you have to pay a penalty. And so Roberts finds that the fact that the penalty, it's called a penalty, is unconstitutional. But he says, if we call it a tax, then it's constitutional. How the Obama administration, in the lead up to getting the law passed, went out of their way to not call it a tax. And they shot you down the minute they called, no, it's not a tax, it's a penalty. Remember, it's a penalty. And so it goes to the Supreme Court on that basis. Well, Roberts says, yeah, we understand that it's a penalty, but if it's a penalty, it's not going to pass this ruling, and so we have to call it a tax in order to pass this ruling. A lot of people called that logic tortured. That's probably a fairly accurate description. In response to that change of opinion, the conservative justices on the court took the unusual step, it's reported, of issuing a joint opinion. Now, usually, a justice on the Supreme Court writes an individual opinion, and then other justices choose whether or not they want to join that opinion. Supreme Court joint opinions are very rare, and they're usually reserved for quote-unquote momentous statements of principle. So think about cases like Brown versus the Board of Education, right, where you're striking down the segregation of schools, that kind of thing. But they did that in this case. Now, Roberts actually authored both opinions, people say. That kind of lends credence to the theory that there was a change of heart. And if you read the opinion, you find something very strange. It goes on for 17, 18, 19, 20 pages. It's hard to tell exactly, but it's a bunch of pages before it even mentions that it's a dissent. It keeps referring to the dissent, but it's written as though it was the majority opinion, referring to a dissent's challenging arguments in a dissent. 18, 19, 20 pages later, it actually mentions that it in fact is a dissent. And so it kind of lends credence to the fact that Roberts actually wrote them both and then just kind of submitted the one and voted for the one that he wanted to. This past December, Roberts reportedly bullied the other justices into refusing to hear a case brought by the state of Texas alleging election fraud. Texas sued a bunch of battleground states saying that the way that they counted their votes was unconstitutional. Every state in the nation, which, by the way, Texas brought that case under the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. That's the exact same legal argument that Roberts helped craft for George W. Bush 20 years ago. And so Texas brings that case. Just about every other state in the nation, except for four, along with some territories like the U.S. Virgin Islands, signed on for Texas or against Texas in that case. You literally had a case where every state in the nation was involved, or virtually every state in the nation was involved. And so if you've got 46 states that are arguing with each other and suing each other, where is that case going to be heard if not the U.S. Supreme Court? Well, Roberts bullies the other justices into refusing to hear that case. They say that Texas lacked standing to bring the suit. Now, legal watchers believed because of the merits of the case and also kind of the weighty issues that needed to be decided by it once and for all, the court would have no choice but to take it up. But the Supreme Court declines to hear it. They don't even want to hear the arguments. They say Texas lacks standing. Roberts at the time, of course, also said, I don't care about Bush v. Gore that happened 20 years ago under the same exact legal argument. They didn't have riots back then. This is what he says. In February, Roberts again sided with liberal justices in dismissing election fraud cases brought by officials in Pennsylvania. Legislators in Pennsylvania say that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court crafted election regulations against their wishes and against their rules. The Constitution is very clear. It's state legislatures that craft election regulations. Well, the Supreme Court found that the complaints were moot now that Donald Trump had left the White House. It no longer mattered. And so campaigns lack standing before the election is certified, and then their arguments are moot after the election is certified. What are you supposed to do? Well, what you're supposed to do is not fight the globalists. You're supposed to be obedient. And John, the whistleblower, says the FBI is all about getting influence. I've also mentioned this to you before. He says they're dirty, they control it, but it's not like they control it every day. They don't tell people do this, this, and this. It's just that when they need the big one, they can call it in. It seems like every once in a while, John Roberts gets called in for the big one, right? In 2016, a young man by the name of, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Chike Uzwegbunam, who was a student at Georgia Gwinnett College. Now, Uzwegbunam is an evangelical Christian. And in 2016, he's standing on a stool in a quote-unquote speech area at his school. Not sure what that is. But he's standing in a speech area at his school talking about his religion. And he's passing out religious literature. Now, he was following the school's directions, and he was following school policy, and he was speaking at a spot reserved, a spot designated by the school as a quote-unquote speech zone. Well, campus police approach him and say that there are complaints about his speech. One of the officers says the space did not allow open-air speaking and that he had violated the school's code of conduct because his speech constituted disorderly conduct. Well, Uzwegbunam says, you know, I'm actually following all of the policies. This is not fair. You're infringing on my First Amendment free speech rights. So he sues, saying the school violated his First Amendment rights. Now, in the meantime, this case was just decided this week, but in the meantime, Uzwegbunam has graduated and the school has changed its policy. They say that now students can speak and give speeches just about anywhere on campus. Most of the campus is now a quote-unquote speech zone, again, whatever that is. But the suit goes all the way up to the Supreme Court. And this week, they handed down a ruling. 8 of the 9 justices vote in favor of Uzwegbunam, even the liberal justices, 8 of the 9. It is undisputed that Uzwegbunam experienced a complete violation of his constitutional rights when respondents, that's the school, enforced their speech policies against him. That's from the majority opinion written by Clarence Thomas. The only dissenting voice was John Roberts. He voted against it. He said the case was moot, there's that word again, because Uzwegbunam had already graduated and the school had already changed its policies. The whole thing is rotten, folks. It's rotten to the core. Actually, the country itself is not rotten to the core. Remember, there is no divide between Republican and Democrat. That's just wool that's been pulled over all our eyes. That's fake. The divide is between populist and globalist. It's between people who want to live their lives and take care of their families and people who want to destroy the world that we're living in as we know it. It's not that the nation is rotten to the core. It's that the nation's institutions are rotten to the core. It's the institutions that need to be cleaned out. Everybody in there right now has to go, unfortunately, with very few exceptions. They all need to be voted out, which, by the way, voting people out of office is the only language understood. It's the only course of action. If you censor people, that's great. If you complain about them on Twitter, they could care less, to be honest. Throwing people out of office, voting them out of office is the only language they speak. And they all need to go. If you're there, you're compromised, again, with very few exceptions. You're contaminated. I mean, talk about needing to be quarantined. All these people, if they're there, they've been infected with something. They've been infected with globalism. These are the people that need to be quarantined and contact traced, not us. We're the healthy people. But see, this is what globalists have to do. They have to blackmail people into liking them because nobody would otherwise. Nobody would support their policies otherwise. That's why they do what they do. They think that by running these blackmail operations and making people, forcing people to do their bidding, they think they're protecting themselves. Well, maybe it's time we start protecting ourselves from them. Well, that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any comments on any of the issues we discussed, drop me a line. You can reach me at comments@itnshow.com. That's comments@itnshow.com. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Until next time, take care of yourselves.
If it's on your mind, it's in the news. Subscribe to In the News on both iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. This has been In the News.